atmospheric conditions, gravitation measurements. Jordan slipped quite naturally into the command chair and pressed the communications stud. "Intercom," he spoke firmly, "connect me to all team members." In an instant, the communications console showed he was connected. "This is Jordan. The sensors show a spot of light down on the planet's night side. We're trying to determine what's causing it. I'd like the planetary field team and the sensor engineer to come to the bridge, please." They all came, every one of the group, jamming the compartment, making it stuffy with their body heat. "What on earth could it be?" Meek asked, his eyes fixed on the light. "We're not on Earth," someone snapped. Thornberry replied, "On Earth it might be a village, or maybe a roadside fast food joint." "One light," murmured Patricia Wanamaker, Thornberry's aide, the sensor engineer. Of the 12 men and women in the group, she was the only one not from Earth. She had been born in a space habitat orbiting the planet Saturn. Trish was almost Jordan's height, heavy-set, with a strong jaw set in a squarish, chunky face. Her ash-blonde hair was chopped mannishly short. Staring at the glow intently, she plumped herself down at one of the consoles. "We'd better put up a surveillance satellite to cover the area," Jordan suggested. Wanamaker nodded without taking her eyes from the console's screens. "I'll deploy one of the mini-sets. Synchronous orbit, so it can hover over the area." "Good," said Jordan. Jeff Hazard, standing beside Jordan, said, "I'd better stay here for a while, keep an eye on things." Jordan caught his meaning. "Of course," he said, getting up from the command chair. "I didn't mean to usurp your seat." Hazard smiled, almost embarrassed. "It's not my seat, Jordan." "Not particularly." Still, he settled himself quite naturally into the command chair, his long, slim legs stretched out. Sitting at her console, Wanamaker clipped a communicator over her left ear and began speaking into it in a whisper. The consoles all had voice recognition circuitry, but with six of them jammed in side by side, all the team members had been trained to keep their voices low so that their commands would not be accidentally picked up by a neighboring console. Even so, while she murmured into the communicator, her stubby fingers twitched involuntarily, as if she were using a keyboard. At last she looked up and announced, "Satellite launched. It'll take 86 minutes for the bird to attain synchronous orbit." Jordan looked around at the team. "Any other suggestions? Anything more we should be doing?" "Get a spectrum of that light as soon as you can," said Brandon.
"Put together a team to go down there and look firsthand," said Silvio Defaya.
He was Brandon's geologist, short, solidly built, usually easygoing. But now he looked intense, eager as a greyhound who had just spotted a rabbit. "Right away," Brandon agreed.
"Now wait," cautioned Meek. "We ought to scout the terrain first, see what we'd be up against.
See what kind of topography that area has.
Check for gravitational anomalies."
"I agree," said Jordan. "I'd like to know what the area is like before we go barging into it."
"But what if the light disappears before we get there?"
Brandon countered. Jordan spread his hands. "Now listen, we've just arrived here. It's night down there where the light is shining. We haven't even begun to map the surface."
"The robotic orbiters have mapped the whole planet," Defaya pointed out.
"But none of the orbiters detected that light," said Jordan.
"Because it wasn't there, most likely," Brandon said.
"Well, it's there now, and..."
"For how long?"
Brandon insisted.
"We have no control over that," said Jordan patiently.
"But we do have control over our own safety. I don't want us, any of us, to go blundering into the unknown."
"For God's sake, Jordy, that's why we're here, to delve into the unknown."
"And that's what I intend to do, Bran," Jordan said. "But it won't hurt to be a little cautious about it."
"For what it's worth," Hazard added, "mission protocol calls for a robotic reconnaissance of any area we intend to send humans into." Brandon's expression was somewhere between hurt and sulky, but he said nothing more.
"I think caution is a wise policy," said Meek. "We're on our own here. If anything goes wrong, we'll get no help from anyone else."
From her console, Trish Wanamaker said, "We could at least send a robot down there." Analysis.
"Good thinking," said Jordan. Turning to Thornberry, he asked, "Can you arrange that, Mitch?"
With a happy grin, Thornberry replied,
"By God, I'll send two rovers. There are safety and redundancy."
And he pushed through the crowded compartment to one of the consoles.
"Can anyone think of anything else?" Jordan asked. something we should be doing.
I still have to examine more than half of you, said Yamaguchi. One at a time.
After the exams are finished, we should have dinner, said Meek. We need to get on a regular schedule sooner or later. I suggest sooner.
Jordan chuckled. Yes, I suppose you're right. Still, glancing at the display screens, it's been an exciting first few hours.
With more to come, Brandon added.
Most of the team went back to their individual quarters, although Hazard, Wanamaker, and Thornberry stayed at the command center. Paul Longyear, the lead biologist, headed for the infirmary with Yamaguchi. Jordan started back toward the wardroom with Brandon, Meek, and Elise Rudaki. A spot of light, Jordan mused as he sat at one of the tables facing the wall screen. The light was clearly discernible against the darkness of the planet's nightside. What could it be?
There aren't any other lights anywhere on the planet, said Brandon, sitting beside him.
None that we have seen, said Elise, who brought a mug of coffee from the dispenser and sat on Brandon's other side.
From the dispensing machines, Meek said, Whatever it is, I suppose it's some natural phenomenon. A lava puddle, perhaps.
Do you think that's likely? Jordan asked.
We don't know what's likely and what's not.
Not yet, said Meek, as he carried a tray bearing a teapot, a cup, and a plate of cookies to the table. Carefully arranging them on the table, he sat down and added,
This is a new world, after all. It might look superficially like Earth, but we shouldn't expect it to be precisely like our planet.
I suppose not, Jordan agreed. Elise shook her head.
Everything about this planet is strange, unexpected.
Brandon said, Of course.
How can it be here? How can it exist and bear life?
That's what we're here to find out, said Meek.
But it shouldn't be here at all, Elise continued. Not with an atmosphere and oceans. They should have been boiled away when the pup went through its nova phase.
The pup, Meek groused. Astronomer's humor.
With a glance at Elise, Brandon countered.
Sirius has been known as the dog star since ancient times. In the constellation Canis Major, the big dog, said Meek. I'm not totally ignorant.
Undeterred, Brandon went on.
So when Sirius B was discovered, a dwarf star accompanying the dog star, naturally it was called the pup.
Naturally, said Meek scornfully.
The point is, Elise said, totally intent, when the pup exploded, it should have scoured that planet clean.
But it didn't.
Perhaps it did, Jordan said. But the planet has had enough time to regenerate its biosphere.
That would take billions of years, Elise countered. Sirius itself can't be more than 500 million years old, and its companion must have been formed at the same time. The pup couldn't have gone nova more than a few tens of millions of years ago.
You're certain of that? Meek challenged.
Within a factor of 10 or so, said Elise.
That's a pretty big margin of error, Meek sniffed.
Not bad for an astrophysicist, said Jordan, smiling at her.
Even so, Elise insisted. The planet hasn't had time to recover from the pup's nova explosions. It's impossible.
But there it is, Meek said, jabbing a finger toward the wall screen display. You can't deny that it exists.
But how can it be?
Mildly, Jordan replied. That's what we're here to find out, isn't it?
Yes, she murmured. Of course.
Another thing, Brandon said.
Jordan groaned inwardly. Bran wouldn't let the argument stop. Is he trying to impress Elise or just trying to top Meek?
Sirius C is the only planet in the system, Brandon pointed out. There's nothing else. No other planets, not even asteroids or comets. The Sirius system is totally clean except for this one planet.
A planet very much like Earth, added Meek.
Elise said, Between Sirius's gravitational pull and the pup's, all the minor bodies must have been swept away.
Then she added,
Perhaps.
Do you really think so? Jordan asked. Elise smiled a little.
No, not really. It's the only explanation I could think of.
The system's totally clean, except for that one Earth-sized planet, Brandon murmured.
It is very strange, said Elise.
Scary, almost, said Brandon.
The four of them fell silent, each wrapped in their own apprehensions. Inexplicably, Jordan flashed back to the hell of Kashmir and Miriam wasting away from the man-made toxins of the bio-war. With a force of will, he raised his eyes to the display screen and said,
Well,
strange or scary or whatever.